it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello and welcome to the Wisden World Cup Daily Podcast. India's inevitable march to the semi-finals continues. They made it 4 wins from 4 today in Pune. They won't be showing the highlights of this one in years to come. Bangladesh without their talismanic captain, Shakib Al-Hassan, got off to a decent start with the bat. Tanzid and Litton Das both scored 50s, but thereafter were pegged back by the likes of Kuldeep Bumrah, Jadeja and co. The run chase was a cakewalk. India lost 3 wickets, all of which were attempted heaves for 6. But however routine the result, there were questions for India after the injury to all-rounder Hardik Pandya, and with no like-for-like replacement, not just in the squad, but in the whole country, they potentially have a difficult decision to make. I'm Yaz Rana, and with me today is the Wisden India editor, Adia Sharma, who'll also fill us in about the live stadium experience in India so far this tournament. I'm going to start with a little bit of a rant, though, Adia. With 15 runs to win, Kohli was on 85. And from that point on, everything was about Kohli getting to 3 figures in what was, for me, uncomfortably manufactured. There were singles that were declined. Bangladesh bowled a few wides that you wouldn't be surprised to hear if they ended up being deliberate. And then you had a clear wide not given by the umpire when there's only 2 runs to win, which for me, by the way, was by far the worst thing that happened. I think that damages the sporting integrity of the game and the tournament overall. And I didn't like it on a couple of cricketing levels. I think India are a team that is trying to promote selfless cricket. They're obviously playing a different brand of cricket to what they've done at previous tournaments. And it was clear that Kohli, as a senior player, was emitting a message to everyone saying, actually, individual stats do matter. And I thought it was an interesting insight into Kohli that this is a man who's aware of the stats, because you've got that celebration at the end when he gets to 100. And 100's are arbitrary marks for players to celebrate at anyway. But literally, in this case, what are you celebrating if this is the manner you get there? You know, you're clothing full tosses to deep mid-wicket and not running, relying on a generous bit of umpiring. He's basically celebrating what the number in his century column says on his cricket info page. And, you know, you can tell that I don't like it. I think especially because I think Rohit and Gill clearly bat like players who aren't in it for milestones. They could have walked to 100s today, but were out trying to score as quickly as possible, really. And I'd also be quite interested to know what Bangladesh players think of it. But anyway, Adi, what were your thoughts?
I think you've summed it well. I don't think it looks good in the World Cup game, even though it's a very comfortable chase. You know, what the umpire did also did not look right. What Kohli has done is given the broadcasters about 3-4 days of footage that they can rerun until the next India game. So, but yeah, obviously it just does not look good on TV.
Yeah. Anyway, India once more looked ominously good, dangerous to the ball, imperious to the bat. It doesn't always happen with India at major tournaments, but it feels like pretty much everything is falling into place at the right time.
It seems to be. The bowling setup looks really good. You know, all the bowlers have done pretty well. Batting wise, you know, your top three has done exceedingly well, and I think overall it's a pretty good place to be. For India fans, obviously, this is also something that they've experienced before, and that lingering fear stays of peaking too early. You know, you don't want to see a lot of good stuff early into the tournament so that you end up seeing all the bad stuff at the end.
Yeah, I was thinking about it today. I think you can reasonably argue that India have the best two openers, the best number three, the most in-form keeper batter at number five, the best seam bowling all-rounder, the best spin bowling all-rounder, the best seamer, and the most in-form wrist spinner. If you were to pick a form World 11 at this very second, you could have as many as six, seven, or maybe even eight India players in it. We've alluded to it a couple of times, Adia, that Hardik Pandya limping off the field early on in the Bangladesh innings was the big news from the game. He is literally irreplaceable. He's a number six who doubles up as a frontline bowler. There are very few of those in the world. We don't know how serious the injury is, but he didn't return to the field. How do you think India replace him if he is ruled out of a few games?
I think you said it in simple terms. Hardik Pandya cannot be replaced. What India can do is sort of tweak their combination and get in, say, just make it like six batsmen and five bowlers, six batters and five bowlers. They can get in Shami to sort of fill the space for the extra seamer that goes off. And in terms of the batting, they can get in Surya Kumar Yadav. There's also the option of having Ishan Kishan, but I feel Ishan Kishan has been a little out of depth in the two games he played. So yeah, Surya Kumar Yadav finds his way back into the ODI team somehow, if that happens.
Yeah, Pandya is a very hard man to replace. My moment of the game, by the way, was that Hardik Pandya over, seeing Virat Kohli complete it, his first bowl in ODI cricket in 6 years. And he has some list of ODI scouts, by the way, only four wickets in ODI cricket, but they are Craig Kieswetter, Quinton de Kock, Alistair Cook and Brendan McCullum. And I love how, you know, one of the most technically correct batters the game's ever seen has such an ugly action. They almost cancel each other out. What's your moment of the game?
Also, don't forget the delivery that took Kevin Peterson's wicket off his zero delivery in T20. But yeah, for me, the moment of the game was, I think, that Bumrah Yorker that got rid of, who was it? Mehmudullah, is it? Fast, accurate, as always, hitting the base of the middle stump. That's really a fast bowler's dream. And it sort of encapsulates how Bumrah has been in this tournament for India as well. Just being perfect, near perfect, really.
Him and Jadeja have just been sensational. Bumrah averages less than 15, an economy of less than four. Jadeja has conceded 40 runs, under 40 runs in all four games that he's bowled in so far. We know that Bumrah is brilliant, but there were question marks as to how brilliant he would be given that he'd spent so much time out injured. I almost feel that Jadeja's excellence is more important, in that obviously it's a World Cup and India, so spinners are going to play a big part, but he has been utterly brilliant so far, particularly with how hard he is to get away. It seems like batters are really struggling to even rotate the strike against him.
Yeah, absolutely. I think him and Kuldeep in the middle, what they've done is that they've bowled a little defensive, in the sense like they don't worry too much about not picking wickets. They stifle the batters till a point, and after that either they pick up the wicket or someone else who's coming in. And I think in that sense Rohit has done a really good job in switching his bowlers, not ensuring there's monotony with spinners from both ends. He's been changing it, bringing in, say, Siraj or Shardul Thakur in the middle, and just keeping it different for batters. So they really don't get a lot of time to settle down. And Jadeja, as you said, I think accuracy has always been his biggest forte. And on these pitches, when it turns a bit, you know, he bowls it quicker, it's very difficult for batters to you know, as you said, rotate strike, even if score runs.
Mm. Well, that's it for part one. In part two, we'll talk a bit about Bangladesh, more about India, and we'll look forward to tomorrow's game and a bit more. On the game itself, a bit on Bangladesh. Shakib, obviously a massive miss for them. Shanto filled in as captain. There was potentially a brief opening when Gill fell, and with Pandya potentially not being able to bat, there was an opening. And Shanto continued without a slip, and the ball went straight to where slip should have been, or could have been. So a sort of missed opportunity there. What did you think of Bangladesh's performance today, Adia?
I think it sort of was, at certain points, an opportunity lost for them. I think the kind of start they got, I think that is a very good way to neutralize India bowlers up front. Just, you know, being a little steady at the start, then doing well in the power play. And I think after the power play, the way they targeted the spinners, I think that was probably a really good, you know, platform to for them to get to a good score. But then again, it's sort of very difficult to not see Shakib Al Hasan in the middle order. It just, the batting just looks pretty weak when he's not there. So, and I just feel Mushfiqur Rahim is sort of not, you know, really the kind of number six you might need, say, if you want to capitalize on a good start. So I just feel that Shakib's absence obviously was dearly missed. In terms of bowling, I feel that, I really liked the way that they stuck to that bouncer to sort of dismiss Rohit Sharma. I think that was really good. Even like Shreyas Iyer, they sort of like tied him up a bit. But then again, I just feel this, given the platform that they had, this could have been easily a 300 plus score. And when once they did not reach that, it was an easy chase for India under lights.
Yeah, and Hardoi didn't really get going either. It was a really good innings from Mamadullah, actually. I almost wonder, could he bat one or even two places higher in the order? Neil asked, does Shardul Thakur get a bad rap? Lots of abuse on social media. And in an ideal world, sometimes he won't have to bat or bowl that much. But, you know, a wicket at 6.5 runs and over isn't that bad for a sixth bowler who's going to get targeted no matter how he bowls.
There's this very, there's a clip that's going viral where Ian Bishop asks Shardul Thakur how he bowls the wobble seam. And he's like, I have no idea what happens once the ball is pitched. Neither does the batsman batter. So it's basically that sort of a thing with Shardul. What he does really well is you bring him on when a partnership is brewing and he somehow has that knack to pick up a wicket. Even so, more often than not in the first over itself. I know the numbers aren't really sort of spectacular, as you would say, but he's not really a frontline bowler. So I think the kind of supporting role he does play, and he's picked up like the third most wickets for India since 2022 in ODIs. I think he's just doing his job. I think he's doing his job fairly well. Nothing spectacular. I do feel that his batting is sort of overemphasized. I don't think he's a great batter. The whole concept of him bringing in batting strength and all of that.
So this I was going to ask you this. So there's a lot of debate around the England team at the moment in that Sam Curran is neither a first five bowler or a top seven batter. And then the question is, so why is he in the team? Like, it's very theoretical that you're giving additional strength. I guess I understand that if he's batting eight as opposed to maybe someone like Shami at eight. But with the ball, you could just have a stronger bowler, which might happen now that Pandey's out.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I just feel that India, I think, over relies on that concept of him being a bowling all rounder. That additional batting strength he provides is something that they look to. I think on these pitches also, it's sort of how he's able to, you know, bowl cross seam, just vary his pace a bit. That sort of a bowler somehow fits in India's plans. Mm. It's also interesting because Shardul started off as a new ball bowler, and now he's evolved into this bowler who is used more in the middle overs. I think it's just the criticism probably is more because there is no clearly defined role for him.
Mm. It's great to have you on today, Adia, partly because you've been to a lot of games yourself, and there's been a lot of conversation around the world actually about what the stadium experience might be in India. There have been some games, notably the first game, where there were very few people in the ground. There have been some games of the atmosphere. From the UK looked brilliant. The England-Afghanistan game, you know, it's not an India game and the atmosphere was brilliant. South Africa-Netherlands as well, the atmosphere looked amazing. What was your perspective as someone who's gone to nearly as many games as anyone has?
I guess one thing is the attendance count that is being spoken about. There are different ways to look at it. Say in Ahmedabad, the ground itself is so huge that if it is not filled really, it won't look like, a game has audience, especially like the first tier basically is all orange. So if it's not filled, it just looks jarring.
Really stands out. Yeah.
Yeah. So as good as it is when it's filled, it looks as jarring and it's not. So that is there. And especially I think for non-India matches, this is going to be a conversation. ODI format, there's a different perception to things. People, not everyone basically has the convenience to sit for 8-9 hours from 2 p.m. on a working day. So for non-India matches, obviously India matches usually happen on a weekend. You can expect better crowds. You can expect near full houses, and that's been the case so far. For non-India games, I think the crowd still has been decent. And I think overall, I think barring a couple of stadiums, and I haven't been to Lucknow yet, the crowd experience has been a bit iffy in terms of the response that people are giving as to how facilities are. Some grounds have become really good. Say the Delhi Stadium apparently has done really, they have done wonders. You can see it in how the structure looks now in terms of providing facilities. But at the end of it, I would just say that for an average fan, accessibility continues to be a challenge, right from booking tickets to actually reaching the ground. It's not always easy. Like there are few grounds that are in the middle of the city, say a Delhi, the Delhi Stadium or the Bangalore Stadium, where the fans can still come in, but some are still on the outskirts, like the Hyderabad Stadium, the Pune Stadium. So for all these stadiums, there'll still be a challenge getting in a full house. And that's also a big dream, to get in full house for non-India matches.
Mm. Yeah, I saw some chat that the allocation of games to different cities perhaps didn't give India the best opportunity to sell out non-India games. A lot of grounds that potentially don't host as much cricket as the traditional hubs in Chennai, Bangalore, Mumbai have quite a lot of games, which might contribute to the attendances.
It's also, again, because every state association wants one India game. So you need to sort of spread it across the whole country. And it's a huge country, obviously. It was crazy how much India is traveling through the World Cup, and especially even before the World Cup in the warm-up games. There's a lot of politics. There's a lot of, this and that, which is not purely cricket, that's happening in the background. Mm. But yeah, at the end of it, I think I am pretty fine with how much crowds have come in and what the interest levels are. That was the concern at the start, especially when the World Cup should have started with an India game. That was something that I just couldn't understand why that was happening. But yeah, I think from the India-Pakistan game, the World Cup, I think for India has just started.
Mm. And finally, we've got a massive game tomorrow, Australia-Pakistan, two of the teams right in the thick of it in the semi-final race. Both have had up and down campaigns so far. How do you see it going? Because, you know, realistically, it's unlikely that both of these teams qualify for the semi-finals. There's a chance that they do, but given the start India and New Zealand have had, you're looking at two teams out of Australia, Pakistan, England, South Africa qualifying. So absolutely huge game.
I think this is where the real Pakistan way will be tested, because the coach and the director have said that they are a 330 team and they basically rely on scoring heavy and then on their bowlers to do the job. It's obviously been a bit unfortunate for them that, you know, sickness has come into the camp. There have been injuries. But you can always trust Pakistan to be in this spot of bother and then, you know, produce something extraordinary. I do feel that for tomorrow's game, Australia have a slightly upper hand. Just that, you know, they didn't obviously start off well, but they have a win under their bag. And for them, it's usually about, you know, starting afresh from every game. But yeah, I was at the practice session for both teams today. And interesting, you know, approaches. I think Pakistan, obviously, because they are under an injury and sickness cloud, they did not have five players coming in. There was five absentees. I think in a very regular session for Australia, what was interesting was how much David Warner played right-handed. Even though there's very little novelty left in that. But yeah, I think for me, overall, I feel Australia might just be hitting their strides now. And I think they could just, you know, come back. Pakistan are losing their way a bit. It depends on how this goes for them. What do you think?
I don't really know, to be honest. I think people, including us, to be honest, have come to a reasonably firm conclusion as to where teams are at the moment. I think it's very dependent on who you've actually played. So, for example, on yesterday's podcast, we were saying New Zealand, obviously four wins from four, but they've played three, maybe even four of the weakest teams in the competitions. So it's hard to really work out exactly where teams are. Australia, you know, they actually were quite competitive for a lot of that game against India. Obviously, the end result looked pretty one-sided, but, you know, 65-70% of the way through that game, it was actually pretty even. South Africa game didn't go well. But again, you're talking about two potential semi-finalists there. Whereas Pakistan had a pretty close game against Sri Lanka, who are the only team that's winless, were annihilated by India, really, in the end. And actually, again, I think the final scoreline probably flattered Pakistan against Netherlands. It ended up pretty comfortable, but you know, they were 38 for three. There were points in the run chase where Netherlands looked pretty good. I just think their bowling attack is so much weaker than it could be. Shaheen's not at his best. Nassim's injured. Harris Ralph looks really good. But Shadab's not at his best either. Mohammad Nawaz, for me, I don't really see how he's ended up being their left-arm spinner when Imad Wasim is still a professional cricketer. I don't know what Nawaz has that Wasim doesn't have. So it's not as strong a Pakistan team as I think it could have been at this point. And obviously, Fakhar Zaman has been a rock at the top of the order for 5-6 years. He's sort of played himself out of the team. Imam's been a bit shaky. So, you know, they're still a really good team. They're a team that had a really good recent run. So I wouldn't be surprised if they pick things up. You know, we know what they're like at major tournaments. They have their ups, they have their downs. And you'd say, optimistically, if you're a Pakistan fan, they've yet to have a major up. So maybe tomorrow will be a good time to have it. Anyway, thanks a lot for your time, Adia. Fingers crossed tomorrow is a thriller we've really been looking forward to.
I think it would be. It's a Chinnaswamy Stadium. It's where huge runs are scored. I think for me, Glenn Maxwell is sort of the person I'm, you know, putting my money on to do really well.
Yeah, well, fingers crossed it's a thriller. Adia, thanks for your time. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow.
Thank you, yes.
Podcast Network.